It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for joining us this morning. Nationwide, there's been an increase in migrants coming to the United States. Ohio has also seen some of this influx with the arrival of Afghani and Ukrainian refugees and asylum seekers from Central and South America. During the State of the Union address last week, President Joe Biden briefly touched on immigration, the southern border, and policy reform. In a speech, he referenced a major bipartisan immigration reform bill that stalled in Congress, in part due to the politics of the 2024 election.
We have a simple choice. We can fight about fixing the border, or we can fix it. I'm ready to fix it. Send me the border bill now.
And immigration has become a central part of many politicians' 2024 campaigns, including the Ohio U.S. Senate race. For example, Republican Matt Dolan recently launched this ad about what's happening at the southern border.
I'm Matt Dolan. Here at our southern border, fentanyl is flooding into America. Chinese-backed cartels are smuggling drugs as deadly as bombs. This poison is a weapon of mass destruction. In the state Senate, I voted to designate the cartels as terrorist organizations. In the U.S. Senate, I'll use whatever means necessary to secure our border and stop the flow of fentanyl into our country.
This hour, we'll spend time understanding the current landscape of immigration policy, how it affects immigrants and non-immigrants in Ohio, and what policy reform might look like. Joining me now by phone is Heather Prendergast, an immigration attorney and partner at Olajokli, Kossoff, and Prendergast. Heather, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being willing to come on. Do you have questions about the immigration process? Is immigration an important issue for you this election cycle? Please call us at 866-578-0903. Once again, 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Heather, we are hearing a lot about the border and the crisis in the southern border. In elections locally, of course, the presidential campaign. And I'm wondering, as an immigration attorney, first, what is your perception of what is happening along our southern border?
I mean, there's no question that the situation on the southern border, you know, we've seen a dramatic increase in efforts to cross. And, you know, that's driven from many different causes. And, you know, the government's apparent failure to come together and provide any sort of solutions, you know, sticking with the status quo, it's just not, it's not tenable. It can't continue going forward.
But speaking with the politics of this, I mean, have you noticed that the Republican candidates in many elections are really pointing to the Biden administration for being at fault for this? Is there any sense of truth in that, or is there any sense of the administration not, you know, taking action when it comes to this influx and really a record number of migrants trying to cross the southern border?
This is a long-term problem that's been in place for decades. You know, it was, you know, we still had illegal border crossings under the Trump administration for all of the talk of being tough on immigration. This was happening then as well. You know, this isn't a problem with the specific administration so much as it is the changing circumstances in our world today. People fleeing their homes for a whole host of reasons, whether it's economic, environmental, driven by crime, various fears of things like that. You know, people are on the move. We also have a situation where, you know, the legal immigration pathways are curtailed in certain ways because perhaps government processing times are extremely low or slow, excuse me, for certain types of visa applications, both here in the United States through U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which processes these benefits applications, everything from green cards to certain non-immigrant visa petitions to naturalization and citizenship. Also, though, processing times at the U.S. consulates abroad for visas slowed dramatically during the Trump administration, due in part to hiring freezes for consular staff. And then just the pandemic exploded everything because many consular services were completely shut down for a very long period of time because of the global pandemic restrictions and inability to see people in person. So we've got these very deep backlogs in our legal immigration systems that also may be contributing to the reason why people are seeking these much more dangerous and, illegal routes to get here to the United States.
So then how long would it take for someone trying to get into the country legally today? And how does it vary depending on the pathway people choose?
Oh, wow. So many different ways this could go.
Okay.
There are temporary visas, non-immigrant visas, for people to come to the U.S. on a temporary basis. This would be the kind of visa that somebody would use to visit Disney World or come for business meetings or to travel to see family or if they wanted to travel the U.S., things like that. If they came for medical reasons. We also, student visas to come study here, certain types of employment visas to come on a temporary basis. But then we have the permanent process, the immigrant visa process that's the pathway that someone would use to pursue a green card here. And each of these types of visas has its own processing times. Oftentimes they go through both U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is under the wing of the Department of Homeland Security, in addition to processing through the Department of State at the consulates abroad if someone needs to be issued a visa abroad. These processes could take anywhere from a few months for a temporary non-immigrant visa to be processed and the person to be able to come here, to a few years, to a couple decades, depending on processing times, delays, and that imaginary line that immigrants are supposed to wait in to come when it's their turn to the United States. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, and there's a lot of things in place that temper the stream of individuals coming to the United States.
But I know that in a previous conversation that you and I had, even with some of the clients that you represent, that pathway to get some sort of legal status, even if you've been working here, let's say participating in our medical system, which we know in Northeast Ohio is incredibly robust and draws an international crowd, it can be very hard to get legal status. Do you have any examples for me?
Absolutely, I do. So there are a limited number of immigrant visas. That's the kind that gets you the green card long term, available each year. To be specific, there's 226,000 immigrant visas designated for the family-based immigration category each year, and about 140,000 that's designated for employment-based immigrants. Mm. Those, we're speaking about people who are pursuing their green card to live here permanently. And those numbers are further broken down by the type of category you're coming in on, what country you're from, because there's per country limits. So in the context of, let's say, a physician at Cleveland Clinic, somebody who is from a country other than India or China, it's a relatively straightforward process, and that's with a little asterisk because there's nothing straightforward about immigration in the United States. But, it's a more predictable timeline, could take 2 to 3 years from the start of the process to the finish. But if you're from India or mainland China, India in particular has a very, very deep backlog for the skilled employment categories, like the ones that doctors would come in on. And but for Indian physicians today, if they are we're processing cases for individuals in that category from India that were started before March 1st in 2012.
Wow, that's 12 years.
That's 12 years. And these are talented physicians, you know, and other individuals also are in this category. But speaking to the market in Cleveland, Ohio, you know, when you go in and you see your doctor, they likely would have been here much longer than the 12 years because they've been working here before the Cleveland Clinic or other hospital system would have started that process for them. You know, and there's not really a definitive time frame in sight for when it's definitely going to come through because these numbers are constantly in a state of flux. They change every month. Sometimes the starting point on the line gets moves up, and sometimes the line gets a little bit longer before you. And it creates a real sense of uncertainty for these individuals who are, you know, clearly contributing to our society, you know, helping our communities. They own homes here, they have kids here. And for those kids also, it creates some uncertainty, especially if they weren't born in the US, if they were born in India, they're stuck in the same line that their parents are. And this could really jeopardize their legal status in the United States once they're over 21. So it's not as simple as just the people crossing the border, you know, illegally, you know, between the ports of entry. This is really a much more broad issue across the entire immigration system. You know, and we haven't changed our rules in immigration since the mid 90s. You know, what we have now does not reflect the actual needs of the United States and our economy as a whole.
We've been asking for calls, and we're getting some. The toll-free number, 866-578-0903. We also welcome your emails, and we're getting some. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org. So Homer has been waiting on the line patiently. Homer, thanks for calling into The Sound of Ideas. Give us your thought, please.
Well, I just feel the border is way out of control. I just come from southern part of California, and it was just amazing how the big white passenger buses were just lined up, and they was filling up on both sides of the border and just taking them wherever they're going. No questions. They're just flocking in like cattle, and people don't see all of them coming over the border, walking over, trying to, because they're getting on the buses in Mexico and coming across in the buses. So the average person just out there walking don't actually see the illegals coming because they're already on buses coming through, and you don't know who's on that bus.
Homer, I appreciate your call and your thought. You know, Heather, I do think that optically, when you look up on the TV screens and you see, you know, many people along the border, many migrants, and then you hear about bus loads being taken to these Democratic cities as kind of a show of resistance, there is a sense that, you know, this crisis is a little out of control. What could add to, you know, the expedition of getting these migrants processed and having some, you know, a sense of kind of order instilled in this? Or do you think this really is an optics problem?
I don't think it's just an optics problem. Again, we have an immigration system that hasn't been significantly reformed since the mid-90s. You know, that was when you had to dial up your internet and the computer paper was like attached with those holes. You know, I mean, a lot has changed, and we need more people. We specifically need more asylum officers who can process and hear these asylum cases more quickly, because many of these people who are entering our country are seeking asylum here in the United States. There is a tremendous backlog of asylum cases and not nearly enough trained officers to hear them quickly. What would be a tremendous help is if we were able to process these asylum claims more quickly so that those individuals seeking safety and security in our country know what's going to happen in their life. You know, we're not talking about cases being processed in a few months. We're talking about cases being processed in 3, 6, 8 years. And during that time, for somebody who has a legitimate asylum claim, they're living in the United States in a state of unknowing what's going to happen with my future, while recognizing that they're going to have to continue to recount this horrible thing that they're fleeing from. You know, they can't put it behind them because the case is still ahead of them. So having this swifter resolution to these cases would go a long way to easing the circumstances at the border, because right now these cases have to be processed, and while they're waiting to be processed, the people are in many cases here in the United States waiting for those cases to work their way through the system. Just to the caller's point, I'm not aware of anything where the United States government is affirmatively picking people up on buses and shipping them into the United States. There may be buses that are coming from the border that immigration is moving those individuals away from those border cities further inland to processing centers. But, you know, certainly we have all seen news coverage on reputable media sites of people coming through holes in fences and border patrol officers waiting there to receive them into vans and process them at border patrol facilities.
All right, Heather, we're going to take a quick break and return with this conversation. I'd love to also focus on the asylum seekers that have been welcomed into Northeast Ohio. You know, many from Central South America, from Afghanistan and Ukraine. But let's take a quick break and we'll return with you. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. Thank you for staying with us this hour. We're having a conversation with Heather Prendergast, a immigration attorney and partner at Algie Jockley, Kossoff and Prendergast. Heather, thanks for staying with us. And I wanted to ask you about the asylum seekers that are coming into our country. And essentially, what is the path for an asylum seeker to get legal status in this country or to remain here again, you know, with kind of the blessing or legal parameters that the U.S. government can give them?
Yeah, so some asylum seekers come legally to the United States. They may be here on a student visa studying at one of our colleges or universities when things unexpectedly happen at home that make it, you know, that they fear their return. You know, they might present themselves at the border with a visa and ask for protection at that time. You know, so not everybody who's seeking asylum has come through the southern border or any border for that matter. We've got a huge northern border, which is much closer to home for us in Ohio. You know, so there's an affirmative pathway to asylum where you apply for asylum to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. You would be scheduled for an interview with an asylum officer. For us in Ohio, our asylum office is based in Chicago.
Oh.
And then the Chicago office rides the circuit periodically and will come to Cleveland to conduct interviews of those applicants who are located here. And that would be the same for other cities. You know, they'd go visit. If the case is approved by the asylum office, that person is on the path to receive a green card. If they have a spouse or children, the spouse or children could be derivatives and could also pursue green cards based on that asylum grant to the principal beneficiary. If that asylum grant is not approved by the asylum office in an affirmative filing, it doesn't get denied. It gets referred to an immigration judge. So that applicant would be able to pursue their case in immigration court before an immigration judge. If granted, again, they're on the pathway to get a green card. If not granted, then they would be removed for people who are coming in illegally, passing, and that's someone who's entering between the ports of entry, coming through a port of entry, like going through customs at the airport. That's sort of like knocking on the front door and asking to be let in. Coming in between the ports of entry might be more akin to breaking the window and sneaking in right. The back way. But those individuals, if they pass what's called a credible fear interview, they would be referred to immigration court to pursue their case before an immigration judge. So it cuts out that affirmative piece before U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services if they're in removal proceedings.
We mentioned earlier that Ohio and our region saw an influx of Afghan, Ukrainian, Central and South American asylum seekers. And in some respects, we've done a lot of reporting here at IdeaStream and on our show in particular about the fact that Northeast Ohio is really seeing part of its pivot and need to gain in population and grow the region as being an area that's welcoming to immigrants. So for those asylum seekers, they're coming here legally, correct? And is there sort of expedited processes for them at all?
Yeah, I mean, even it's hard just to make blanket assumptions based on what country they're coming from. But
sure.
If somebody, they're certainly there aren't necessarily expedited processes per se. And it's hard to make blanket statements, Jenny, when it comes to U.S. immigration, because there's always some quirky special rule that applies to something. Many, many different ways this could go. But, it's Cleveland as a city with a rich immigrant history. We have many different cultural communities in the greater Cleveland area. And I think we're a pretty welcoming place. And this is no exception, the way that we've welcomed the immigrants from Ukraine and Afghanistan and from all over the world, really. If the individual is seeking the affirmative pathway of asylum, as I said, that's going to go through the Chicago Asylum Office, and eventually they'll make their way to Cleveland to conduct an interview. It could be, 6 or 8 years down the line. During that time, those individuals are going to have employment authorization so that they can contribute to the community and support themselves and their families. If they have a defensive asylum application, they're in removal proceedings for some reason or another, then that's going to make its way through the immigration courts. And, it's a waiting game. These things take time and processing times certainly can change. So, if we had a massive influx of asylum officers, I suspect we'd see these cases move a lot more quickly.
Let's take a call from David, who's been listening and waiting on the line. David, thanks for calling into the show.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead with your thought.
Well, I don't know if it's the right thing or not, but I had heard when President Biden took office on the first day, he signed a thing to let all these people flood into this country, and they're not coming in legally. I have a brother-in-law that works on the Border Patrol in Douglas, Arizona, and he said it's an absolute mess. So I was wondering what the lawyer had to say about this, because from what he said, the border was under control until President Biden signed that restriction or whatever you want to call that paper. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that.
Sure. Well, we appreciate your call, David, and sharing your thoughts with us. Heather, what do you know about any sort of actions taken by the Biden administration when it came to the border or any sort of allowance of asylum seekers into the country?
Yeah, at the start of his presidency, President Biden put forward, a really bold immigration plan of what he would like to see happen. But the reality is that, laws have to be passed by Congress. So he can make suggestions and his list of hopes and dreams of what he'd like to see. But without any action by Congress, there's really not much that he can do other than pass executive orders, which are, you know, temporary and themselves are limited. You know, they can't do everything via executive order, and those can certainly be challenged in court and changed by subsequent administrations. The Biden administration, you know, when they came to office, it was during the pandemic. There were still restrictions in place based on that. Biden did not open the border or loosen it or make things more available. I think the belief that he was going to be just a kinder, gentler president on immigration might have influenced individuals to make their way to the border just for those reasons alone.
Right.
But there hasn't been any sort of affirmative welcoming of undocumented individuals into the United States. And the Biden administration has taken steps to try to stem the flow of migrants. For example, they introduced some, they're called parole programs, humanitarian parole programs, and they were targeted at specific places, Afghanistan and Ukraine initially, and then expanded to Nicaragua, Cuba, Haiti, and Venezuela. Those were the some of the countries that we saw the biggest influx of migrants at the border. And to stem that tide, it's a pathway that allows someone in the United States to serve as a financial sponsor to an immigrant or to an individual from one of those countries, fill out all sorts of paperwork indicating that they're going to financially ensure that they're supported. And then there's a limited number per month that are allowed to come in. And it's a carrot and stick approach, because for those countries that have been designated with these parole programs, if individuals cross illegally into the United States, their ability to obtain asylum is limited, because there was potentially a legal pathway for them to get in there otherwise. Now, these aren't perfect programs. Nothing is. But it has significantly cut, for those countries where it's designated, the flow of migrants. And that kind of shows how having some sort of legal pathway in place drives people away from that dangerous illegal migration. Now, this is huge business, Jenny. You know, there's an article in the Washington Post about, and articles all over the place, but the one I'm thinking of is from the Washington Post about the flow of where these migrants are coming from. And this article focuses on migrants from India. And these aren't poor, impoverished migrants. They're people who are paying tens of thousands of dollars to have, you know, a version of a coyote help them illegally get to North America and ultimately the United States. It's extremely expensive. It's huge business.
Right.
And, you know, people wouldn't be selling off their family farm to finance this kind of risky journey if they thought there was an actual legal pathway.
Sure.
You know, the people who are benefiting from this, you know, really defunct system that we have in place are the criminals who profit from these schemes to get people here. You know, and it's quite dangerous.
Let's go ahead and listen to a clip from President Biden's State of the Union address when he was talking about attempts to reform the immigration system and the fact that it's been stalled in Congress. Let's hear a clip.
In November, my team began serious negotiations with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing.
So let's talk about proposed reforms that we could potentially see. Let's just say bills are passed and, you know, it doesn't become a political hotcake that might improve the immigration system or in turn the situation on the border as well.
Yeah, the bipartisan bill that Biden was referencing there is really laser focused on the border itself, providing massive amounts of funding, $20 billion to the Department of Homeland Security, Justice Department, State Department, and other agencies to really hone in on what's happening at the border. It doesn't do a lot. It does a little, but not a lot to address the real crisis that we have with respect to legal immigration in this country, the crisis level backlogs that have contributed to many extra years of delay in processing legal immigration cases. It's a start. It would certainly help those overworked border agents who could use backup by having additional staff. It would increase the number of asylum officers and immigration judges. It would increase funding for the consulates. Most immigration programs are fee funded, so people pay big fees to the government to process their visa applications. And more is needed, so this would help support that. But it doesn't address the sort of chronic problems that we have in place that contribute to where we are, again, with our legal immigration system.
And Heather, we have about, I'm sorry to interrupt, we have about a minute and a half left, even less. So give me some of those reforms that you think might be effective.
So reforms that could be effective, you know, to address, we've got the perennial issue of the Dreamers here in America. Certainly this border bill doesn't impact that. That could go a long way to having some sort of pathway to citizenship for the Dreamers here in this country. For those long-term undocumented agricultural workers, having a pathway to legalization for them. You know, we have severe restrictions. There are bars in place to people being able to come back once they leave, getting rid of those 3 and 10 year bars to reentry, having waivers available for immigration issues. The list is long, Jenny. There's not enough time here. But this isn't a talking point. These are people's lives. This is our country, and we need a functioning immigration system. And having, you know, cute policy ideas that are more talk, less substance, that's not really helping anyone other than the politicians scoring points off of, you know, getting people riled up about an issue that they often don't take the time to understand in depth to come up with substantive policy solutions that could actually make a difference and help.
Heather, I appreciate your time, and we could have spoke another 20 minutes. So I apologize that we have to go here, but we'll have you back on again to talk about immigration in a thoughtful and substantive way. So Heather Prendergast, an immigration attorney and partner at Algy Jockley, Kossoff and Prendergast, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. To get the last word on today's topic, send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're on Twitter now, X at Sound of Ideas. You can follow me at Jenny Hamill _. You can follow me on Instagram now, too. I'm at Jenny Hamill Ideastream. Tomorrow on The Sound of Ideas, we'll talk about a new resource to help voters learn about the judges that may be on their primary ballots this election cycle. And we'll learn about LaCav, Cleveland's legendary music club. If you missed any portion of the show, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast where you get your podcasts. You can also hear a rebroadcast of the program tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening. And we will speak with you again tomorrow.